This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to this special rewind presentation of a Gen X Grown Up Backtrack. I am John. Here with me, of course, is Mo and George. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, we like to take sometimes these older episodes. This show has been on the air, I say, on the web for almost 5 years now. We have a huge back catalog of episodes. And sometimes you go back and listen to an older one, and we have things to say about either the recording or the topic or whatever. Now, this episode was originally published all the way back December 27th, 2018. So it's been a good long while in our back catalog.
We've been doing it this long?
Sorry. And this is one that we all went back and listened to it again. And the things you should listen for in this episode, first, technically, I listened to it and I go, we were already kind of sounding okay. Our mics were kind of sounding around the same. It wasn't all kind of scratchy here and there. We just about locked in our technical expertise, but some great stories in this episode from our youth.
Yeah, I noticed right away for me that there were a lot of segmentation changes now that we didn't have back then, like the way you would get out of the introduction into the first segment.
Structure of the show. Yep.
We didn't do that in that episode. It just runs straight through. But it was a fun episode to re-listen to. And I think more importantly than it being a fun episode to re-listen to, the whole reason why we're re-listening to it is because Mo is going to damn Uganda for some reason. So we can't really record while he's off with the gorillas and rhinos or whatever.
You know, when I listened to it, though, it felt weird almost. I don't know if you guys had the same feeling just listening to it.
Weird, how?
I didn't realize actually how old it was until you just mentioned it. For some reason, I thought that was like only like a year or so ago that we did that, but apparently not.
Says something for consistency, I guess, right?
I guess there is that.
It does help. Yeah. The benefit of being older is that I didn't remember all the stories that we had in that episode. Yeah. We talk about trusting bulletin boards to cut open our computer and try to cut traces. We talk about the experience of BBSs and the screechy noise.
Don't go giving the whole thing away. No. They might not have heard this one yet.
But that's true. Spoiler alert, we talk about BBSs. Good point. Excellent point, George. So with that, we introduce this rewind to the Bulletin Board Systems Backtrack from December 2018. We sure hope you enjoy it. Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown up. Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listener, to the Backtrack edition of our podcast, which, as you probably already know, is the edition between our regular episodes where we pick a single topic from our youth and dig in deep on that. I am John. Joining me, as always, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And George.
How's it going, guys?
Before we get into the show, I like to dig in and read some fourth listener email, and we absolutely have some that was in response to our last Backtrack. You guys remember we did the Backtrack all about novelty records, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And we posted that episode on Facebook, and a couple of our listeners chimed in. The first was Carl. Carl said, man, those thin plastic records in Mad Magazine. By the way, did you know there's a CD compilation of those Mad Magazine inserts called Mad Grooves Classic Schlock and Roll?
Oh, that's great.
To go find it now.
Yeah, really.
He said he used to listen to Dr. Demento on the radio. And by the way, he credits Rick Dees for convincing him to become a radio DJ.
Really?
Wait, Carl's a DJ or?
Yes, Carl is a DJ. And Rick Dees inspired him to become a DJ.
Cool.
Nice.
Inspired by Disco Duck himself. And then another fourth listener also commented on the novelty records Backtrack. Mike via Facebook said, great episodes, great memories, but You knew there was a butt coming. I kept waiting for a Dickie Goodman reference. He was one of my favorites. Do you guys know Dickie Goodman?
No.
Nah, sounds like somebody out of the Caddyshack movie that got cut from the final edit of the film or something.
Yeah, I never did either. I had to go and find out who this Dickie Goodman was. I have a little sample here. Take a listen.
We are here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it?
Dynamite!
And what did she say when you grabbed her?
Please, Mr. Peter.
Oh. I know sharks are stupid, but what did you think when you took that first bite?
How sweet it is.
Yep. Mr. Jaws, before you swim out to sea, have
this.
You anything else to say?
So that's Dickie Goodman. I pulled down his album, and so much of what he does is taking samples from other songs and do these faux interviews. You remember these, George?
Yeah, I remember hearing this when I was a kid. I remember this was what first got me thinking about how you could edit things together to make them into something completely different.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I remember that specific clip, although I kind of think I remember that one. But
really?
Yeah, no, I remember that stuff, hearing that on the radio.
Wow.
His whole album is like that. So Mike went on to say, I even made my own novelty song to mimic his style called Election 76 when he was 10 years old. by cutting in slices of songs on my cassette as I narrated about the Carter Ford election. Top that nerdiness. Go ahead, try.
I can't.
No.
I cannot.
Anytime you make something funny out of the Carter Ford election, you win. That's it.
You win.
Yeah. You've won the internet for that day.
Pre-internet, he won the internet. Wow, that's impressive. So, yeah, that's why Dickie Goodman wasn't on our novelty records backtrack, because it wasn't on our radar.
No, now it is.
Now it is. So I want to thank both Carl and Mike for chiming in on that backtrack. We always appreciate hearing from our fourth listener. And if you want to be heard, you can respond on social, as Mike and Carl did, or you can hit us up on podcast@genxgrownup.com, and we'll read your message right here on the show. Without further ado, though, it's now time to dig into a backtrack topic that we have had on the list to do for a long time.
Yeah.
We are talking about bulletin board systems.
Wow.
Old BBSs, the way we explored other computers pre-internet.
That sounded vaguely creepy just then. The way we explored other computers. Like, wait a minute, what are you doing here, dude?
Well, it was kind of creepy. If you didn't know what it was about, if you weren't on the inside like we were, that had to seem really weird. Like, you're on somebody else's computer?
Yeah.
What kind of hacker are you? This was before, I mean, pre-internet, obviously. But it used to be you got a computer and you sat it up on your desk and you hooked it up to your TV with one of those little Atari splitters.
Right.
And
the RF modulator.
And you just sat and played whatever you had on a floppy disk. But with the introduction of bulletin board systems, that was the beginning of, I can use my computer to reach out to other people, to other systems, to really expand what you can do on a PC. That's led us to where we are in the internet culture today. Not only did it start out, it was an entirely different experience. Do you remember the first time you dialed in to another computer with a modem? And I certainly do. I'll start and I'll say, though I don't remember the day, I remember there was a cloudy month in my memory where I first discovered I could use a modem to dial into some other system and send messages and do stuff. And I didn't come out of my room for probably 3 weeks, because it was mind-altering. It was boggling to me that what used to be this closed little system, I could now reach out and other human beings were doing this other thing. It caused some problems that we'll talk about later, but it changed the way I thought about computers and the way I thought about how they could impact your life and culture and society that is obvious today, but wasn't back then. What about you, Mo? Do you remember the first time you were able to reach out and use a BBS?
Yeah, I think it was, oh, wow, that's taking me back. I remember going out and just being just amazed at how there was this whole other pocket of information I now had access to, like this whole other thing. Whereas before, everything was like just where I had my computer or what I had floppy disks for, that was it.
Yeah, or what you went and got or typed in out of a magazine or something. Yep.
Now it's like, oh, wow, I could, because I think one of the early uses I did for it was that, I think it was Compute Magazine.
Sure. Yep.
They had like all that, you know, how you had to type in like 1,000 lines of basic code to do like.
Yeah, you could just go download
it. Now you go download it. And I was like, I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. It'll never get better than this.
Right.
And I just, that was the part that just amazed me. Like somebody just having access to that information.
George, how about you? Do you remember when you first used a BBS?
I mean, I'm not going to say I have a specific memory. I have some generalized visual cues, I guess. I remember it was definitely on a Commodore 64. The modem was one of the modems that you plugged into the back slot.
Oh, yeah.
It had to be sometime around after 1985. We had moved away from the main part of the city over out into a farm area. So it was even a different experience for me because I was way outside of the normal realm of contact with all my neighborhood friends, so to speak, and things.
You're even more isolated.
Isolated. Somebody at school, I just started going to a new high school. They had a computer class. I went to that computer class freshman year, and somebody mentioned this thing about bulletin boards and taught me how to use the software on the Commodore 64, gave me a phone number. And I remember logging in and not knowing what in the heck I was looking at.
What to expect.
Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, a numbered menu on there and the name of the bulletin board and everything. And that was really cool. But I was still such a babe in the woods because I'd only ever used a Commodore 64 for playing a few games and trying to type in a bunch of 10 go to 20, you know, program type of stuff. The only part that I specifically remember was being super disappointed in my modem, not because of the speed, but because it wasn't the TV style modem I had seen where you take the receiver and you put it down it wasn't the War Games modem. And I was like, this has just got two little ports where I plug phone cables into it. This is so boring.
How antiseptic. Yeah. Oh, it sounds like we have a lot of good memories and thoughts about our early days with BBSs. So I can't wait to dig into that. And that's what we're going to do on the show right now.
Science, 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 science. Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes.
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Mm. Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.
Thanks to my Atari telephone modem, my computer can call other computers, and I can get information on practically anything. Look at this list. Acupuncture, adolescence, adoption, advice to the lovelorn. Everything is computerized these days.
Bulletin board systems, BBSs, dial-up computer systems, whatever you want to call them, they were BBSs to us. And George, you were just talking about your disappointment with your first modem. Right? You know, I remember my first modem was, you're going to be mad at me. It was what you expected.
You had the War Games modem?
The phone War Games thing. An early 300 baud modem. And the quality of those, by the way, the reliability is pretty shaky. But the first one I had for a short time, your old rotary phone, you dialed the number, and then you put the receiver in these cups. You got to put the right way because one is sending, one's receiving. And that's how I first got onto a BBS for the first time. And you mentioned somebody has to give you a number. It's not like you just go online and search Google that doesn't exist.
Right.
Somebody's got to tell you the phone number. I only used it for a short time because shortly after that, I got a true antiseptic, boring, plug it right into the
phone line,
the jack modem after it because it was so unreliable because of noise and stuff. It was kind of a bad experience. But as soon as I got addicted to wanting to do BBSs, I'm like, I got to get a better modem.
Yeah.
And so I did.
This is taking way too long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing we're talking about, like the baud rates. The reason why I ask is that was like the baud rates were everything.
Right. Sure.
It determined which BBSs you could connect to.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It said how fast you can get information.
Long before CPU speed mattered.
Yeah. Everything was slower than your CPU.
CPU speed didn't matter. RAM didn't matter. Nope. It was all about baud rate.
And just to give you an example, like I think one of the early ones I had was like a 2400 baud, which was pretty damn good at the time.
Oh, yeah. That was a Cadillac compared to what I started with. Jeez.
But still, though, to give you a comparison of how long the time difference is between then and now, I just sent you both a picture through my phone, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Let me know when you get it.
Got it.
Okay. Yep. You got it, right? Do you know how long it would take you to get that same picture just downloading it at 2400 baud?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember hours. The lines coming across the screen.
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours.
Yeah.
It was a picture. You would watch it draw. Yeah, left
yeah,
to right.
You would watch the lines left to right. go across the screen.
You would literally watch it
like
draw.
Like somebody was on my computer and they were typing out this picture.
Is this going to be Big Bird or Pamela Anderson? What the hell is this going to be?
Hopefully, Pamela
I see
Anderson.
Feathers. It could be anything.
I mean, just imagine that. I mean, you literally got this picture in seconds. Both of you, two people got it in seconds. Whereas
right.
back
yeah,
then,
yeah.
it would take me 2.5 hours just to upload it. And then another 2.5 hours for you guys to grab it.
For me to get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was, you had the 300, which was, we all accepted as that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And the next thing I think came along was a 1200 baud modem, 4 times as fast. Are yep. you kidding me?
Yeah, I think it jumped.
Then they
yeah.
hopped up to the 24.
Right.
And then for the longest time, you know, a 14.4 modem was, oh, you're
that,
kidding?
Oh,
14.4 is the best thing in the world.
14.4 was the gold standard.
Yeah, you were the Cadillac yep. of modems, right?
And then if you had like $1,000 to burn.
Oh, sure.
You could get a Hayes 288 surfboard
right.
modem that was, are you kidding me?
Was that actually 28 or was that 2 14.4s that ran parallel or something like that?
Nope. They had,
no,
it was a 28.8.
It was 28. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
But if you got too far ahead, many BBSs couldn't afford those or they would have high speed right. lines because it wasn't like the internet where you could just connect and it'll go as fast as it'll go. They had to have a modem on their end that could send it that
yeah,
fast
yep.
or it didn't do you a bit of good.
Well, and the phone companies were playing catch up because their technology was 100 years old as far as the wiring and everything else is concerned. The boards in their houses, they were having to upgrade and replace all of that stuff in a much faster time frame than the phone companies were used to having to do before. Before, all they had to do was let's make sure person A can talk to person B. Now, it's computer A wants to talk to 17 other computers. We have a demand. People want to pay us for it. We have to
yep.
put the equipment in place for them to be able to do that. It's a completely different world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And even at the bleeding edge of that, you know, just the start of it, I always imagined phone companies were being asked to put phone jacks in places that they would never have been asked to put phone jacks in people's houses before.
Sure.
Because before, you had a phone central to the house in mm-hmm. the living room or dining room. Why the hell are people calling us asking to put a phone jack in this back office, you know, or in this bedroom or whatever? Well, because people wanted to use modems for the first time. It was changing technology, not just the computer technology, but the infrastructure.
And then multiple lines into a house. That was something that wasn't done.
Oh, yeah.
I remember specifically you talked about our first experiences getting on a bulletin board. One of my first things of having to deal with was fighting my parents for use of the single phone line into the house.
Of course. Yep.
And the thing
yep.
is that still amazes me this day, though, is that how all that stuff worked and was all basically analog, right? It was all literally sending sounds and tones
entirely, yeah.
through the phone
yep.
line. Mm-hmm.
Yep, right. It wasn't digital.
It somehow worked.
Just the noises
oh,
and the
yeah.
You know, all those crazy. I mean, even younger people today who remember dial-up internet, at least, they that same sound that you heard dialing up with your modem and those screeching noises, that's the same. That's negotiating yeah. a modem, the same sound that we always heard, just not dialing an ISP. You know, you were on the thing and you just said taking a picture is 2 hours. You tied up the
right.
phone that long
mm-hmm.
and you might be, you know, 70-80% done. And somebody picks up the phone to make a call, and you're like,
yeah.
damn it,
yep.
you've ruined the, it would destroy the entire connection.
You have to start over.
Yeah.
Yep.
And hopefully
yep.
you'd be lucky and you'd be on a local phone number.
Yeah. Well, first you have to fight about
right.
it.
Right. Not like a long distance one because
yeah.
you know, there's no local BBSs that, you know, could do this.
We've talked about the tech that gets you into that. Let's really talk about what was it that a BBS would allow you to do? I mean, let's start at the base level for someone that only has known the internet. Maybe I have a younger listener who didn't know BBSs and they take for granted that I turn on my computer, as long as it's online or on Wi-Fi, I have access to everything. We started from zero.
Yeah.
We had access to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first connected to something, it opened up a world of stuff that was brand new to us. What sort of things could you do for the first time on a BBS that we had never seen?
Well, the first thing I remember is just mostly file access, because the early BBSs, mm-hmm. you would get in and it'd just be like a directory.
Your yeah. compute programs,
yeah.
right?
And you could download it. It had little folders and you just kind of would navigate down and all through command lines too. Like, it wasn't very visual.
There was no graphics. Yeah, this was all command lines.
And so you could actually find
And prior
things.
To that, the only way you got those
yeah.
files was you bought them from a store or somebody gave them to you, you know, sneaker net. They
right.
walked them over to you
yeah.
and you plugged it in. That's the only way you got it.
Yeah.
But now I could get something that it's ready to go. It's already typed in or it's already pirated or whatever it is. And I can take it off the air and get it into my computer. That was a whole new way.
Oh, absolutely.
Communication in general was just the ability to have little message boards where
oh,
people
yeah.
would just talk to you. I remember the first time doing it, it took me a couple of times of going through the menus to understand that what I'm seeing was not like a book someone wrote of people talking to each other.
Well, it was actually like a living...
It's an evolving discussion. Someone dialed in and had a comment, and then later you come back and somebody else had a comment. But up until then, I read documents that were completed.
Yeah.
And I'm reading through this and I'm like, these guys are arguing, but why is that an interesting story? Well, it's not a story. It's really people talking in real time or as close to real time as you could get. So message boards, that was a brand new experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, message boards were key because there was usually a general message board, but then they got really granular a lot of times too, like topics of conversation. You'll see that now, a games message board or a romantic message board. First time I saw that just mm-hmm. blew my little 15-year-old mind like, wow. What's
you
going on
here?
Early
Tinder.
Screw the football one.
Those were completely unique to the experience of being online and interacting with a much wider community than you could in person.
Yeah.
Before you had that happen, you just had what our parents' generations and the generations before that, the closest you would get to interacting with people would be talking about a radio program or a TV show that you saw the night before. Now you were sharing an active experience with each other in a much larger scope than you would be just sitting in front of your television and then at the water cooler the next day at work talking about what did Archie Bunker say to Edith last night.
I'd say one thing I thought about it was that it connected you to people for those topics that were very specific. If you happen to be into airplane plastic models,
right,
or something mm-hmm. like that, you could find a community now where people talk about that.
And there were some that were, the whole bulletin board was dedicated toward that, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was like enthusiasts. So it was like early Reddit almost, I guess I would call it.
Yeah. You know, ironically, you know, I was often accused by my parents, you know, stop playing with the computer, get outside and socialize. And I'm like, I'm socializing more now than I ever knew how before.
It's a different form. It's not in person.
It totally is. Yeah. It clearly is not the same thing as face-to-face interaction, which I cannot overestimate is important to nurture that skill.
Yeah.
But this was something that was unprecedented. They didn't realize that I was actually able to talk to. If they knew I was talking to other people, they might have told me to turn it off. But it was
<That's> true. Who are you talking to?
And then shortly after, it got beyond just raw text of stuff like that. They started to add some games. And initially, they were just text-based games. Mm-hmm. But they started to use, you know, some characters to hop in it. You could play real-time little games like a Space Invadery game, which was tough with the baud rate.
Yeah, in the early stages, those real-time games never worked real well for me. But the games were turn-based, like chess or some style mm-hmm. of a D&D adventure storytelling
Battleship.
Thing.
I played a lot of Battleship online.
Yeah. Those games were very successful.
Yeah, you guys remember the old Star Trek game?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yep, where it had like this, basically it was a little grid and like asterisks were stars and your ship
and
was
you
a
move
different
around.
Symbol.
Yep.
And you basically gave commands, move here, you know, warp 3 here.
A lot of those types of games weren't even the interactive where you were playing with or against another person. Those were just you were dialing in and playing a single player game. But the chess and the Battleship and those games, you were actually playing with another person who, for all you knew, could have been in a completely different part of the world. But back then, just the thought of, oh my goodness, this person is in Japan. We can play the game together. Mind blowing. I'm so happy that as a civilization and as a society, we progressed all the way through those stages. And I was a part of those early stages because it gives me an appreciation for where we are at now.
Just to be there to see it evolve and its creation. Yeah. Yeah. As time went on, some of those BBSs even evolved into what I think you could argue was an early version of HTTP. You know, so when the internet mm-hmm. came along in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was all text based as well. But you started to add hypertext protocol that allow you to have images. There were some front ends for some BBSs that weren't text anymore.
Right.
They weren't ASCII or ANSI. It was actually drawing images. Remember those?
Yeah. There were local bulletin board systems that people would run on their local computers, just like the original bulletin board systems that had GUI graphical user interface systems. The very first one I remember, John, you brought me into the world of Amiga in the early 90s when we first met.
You betcha.
Right?
Yep.
And Amiga was renowned for its graphics capability. Everybody knows, you know, Mac now is the thing. Everybody's like, oh, you want to draw, you want to create videos, you want to do music, you go get a Mac.
Amiga was it.
Amiga was the thing. But the first GUI BBS that I ever logged into was an Amiga BBS. And it was, I think it was like Amiga Now or Amiga Forever or something like that. It was called being able to use that mouse to click on something.
And instead of dumbing it down for the BBS, it was able to actually use all the tools you had.
Yeah, and the thought that you were clicking something on your screen that activated a command on another computer somewhere else, and then gave you a reaction back, like the button would turn red or you would go into a game or into a message room.
I know, yeah. I just being amazed by that by today's standards sounds naive.
Sure.
But it was totally unprecedented before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a world of like, oh, text and use my arrow keys to move around or just type a letter A through Z to pick whatever's on the screen. That was not something that you ever interacted with. They're like, is this a program? Is this running on my computer, on their computer? The answer was both. It was the first time you'd tied all that together.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
Quality Inns uses Hayes modems to send reservations from computer to computer to more than 700 hotels. Imagine the doors Hayes can open for your business. Hayes, innovative products for enterprising people.
We've talked about what BBS has opened up in the world to us and kind of the hardware and the tech. Let's now dig into the real meat of it, which was the experience. And not just the using the BBS, the whole experience of how did you find out about the BBS? You know, how did you deal with it in your home? And you mentioned a little bit already, George, that word of mouth reference system. You know, since there's no Google, how do you even know there's a BBS?
Yeah.
Now, I know subsequent ones you find out one BBS advertises five
right,
for more.
Another. Right.
But you got to have an entry vector. What's the gateway drug, you know?
It's always, I mean, for me, it was somebody at my local high school computer class. It was, you know, one of the kids in the class. And of course, they were in the
Makes
know
sense.
Because it was a computer class. And I was just a dumb jock coming into the class for the first time. Them saying, oh, yeah, there's this cool, like they were doing it on the computer there in the high school because there were no regulations. High schools didn't know to block that stuff at that point or anything. They had.
Yeah, right.
They had modems. They might as well use them.
Unprecedented. Yeah.
So he's like, oh, here's this thing. It's called a bulletin board system. I'm like, we have bulletin boards in the classroom. They're right over there. Why do you need a computer to put a push pin in something? I didn't understand what he was talking about.
Sure. Why would you?
For like the next 30 minutes, showed me everything on the bulletin board system, explained to me how to use it. So immediately I took the phone number down, went home, logged in, created the account. And it wasn't an easy account creation process back then either. Not like it is now. But yeah, word of mouth. I mean, that's how you would find out about those things.
Yeah. And then when you finally got a BBS, you dial it up and more often than not, what was the sound you heard?
Me.
Busy signal.
It's busy.
Yep. And these days, I mean, I think a busy signal is even unheard of now. I mean, nobody knows.
No busy signal.
I know people that don't know what a busy signal is.
Yeah.
if a busy signal comes on a phone, the whole society's break down now. They just like, what the hell is this? I can't leave a
it's
voicemail.
It's either ring or voicemail.
Yeah.
You have two chances, ring or voicemail. There's no busy, no such thing.
I still remember having that the software that, you know, you could put like three or four numbers in and it would try them in succession.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
It's like, oh,
busy. We call those next war one. Dialers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because otherwise it's like, you know, you're sitting there just taking forever just to get, and once you get a connection, you don't want to lose it. Because you may not be able to get it again.
Well, it was just like in War Games, Matthew Broderick, you know, he's running down that list of numbers. Oh, look, it's a bank. Got to make a note of that one. You know, just testing stuff sometimes.
So you're touching right on that, which is that, so BBSs are not, often were not, conglomerates. It was a guy in his house with a modem hooked up to his phone, and he just had a modem. And if you wanted to get on that BBS, you had to catch it when it wasn't busy. Oh, you know, I'm going to get up at 2 a.m. because it's easy to get on this, you know, that kind of thing.
But not only did you have to catch it when it wasn't busy, do you remember that a lot of bulletin boards actually had times of operation? They weren't operating 24 hours
right,
a day.
Because they wanted to use their phone for other business hours or whatever.
Yeah, because at some point, their mom needed the phone and they had to get off.
Their mom needed the phone.
That's exactly right.
You're probably not wrong.
Yeah,
you're probably not wrong. And unlike today where you'd go to one website, I'm going to go to Google, I'm going to go to, you know, MSN, I'm going to go to, you know, wherever. What you would do is you would hop from bulletin board to do different things. Mm-hmm. I play this game here. I talk to these people here. Right. And so you'd put them in a rotation. If this one's busy, you try the next one. If that one's busy, you try the next one just to try to get in. And then you come across one that had, oh, they have three lines. Well, they must be in the Taj Mahal, these guys. And that literally meant they had three phone lines coming in their house they were paying for.
And those are three physical phone lines. That's the thing. It just still blows me away.
No. They're not just ports open on the modem. Yeah. Right. This is three phone lines. Some of them invited you to donate or have a subscription basis to have more access or more time to help pay them for that. But some people were just fanatics about it. And I use that term lovingly. I don't mean that negatively. They were fanatics about the hobby. And they said, you know what? I'm going to pay extra. Because the nice thing about running a BBS for them probably was the information is coming to them. They can log in locally anytime and be part of it. But yeah, it was limited. I think we've talked a little bit in the past about how because this was kind of a Wild West and people didn't know to regulate it like it was on the in the school, like you said, George, there was a bit of a trust factor you had to have because these sources were just random, unseen, faceless entities telling you things now on your computer.
Yeah, this was the ultimate form of stranger danger back in our day. This was long before you had verification systems and I am not a human or I am a robot or whatever the hell those things have you do now. You didn't have any of that stuff. It was just somebody gave me this phone number. I'm going to walk down Nocturne Alley instead of Diagon Alley and I'm going to open this door to this world.
Well, that was a seriously geeky reference, I have to say.
I liked it. Good
you
stuff.
You get like 5 geek points for that one.
I get 5 geek points.
Yeah, bonus points. Yeah.
But,
yeah, you do.
You know, you think about all the stuff that you could do and learn and discover on these bulletin board systems, but you had to have an innate trust built in to what you were getting through that phone line was authentic and real and not harmful. John, you and I, very early on in our Amiga days, early 90s, I don't know if you remember this, but it's a story that I love to tell younger people when they ask me questions about old technology.
Well, back in the day,
on my lawn, there was a bulletin board that you and I would frequent. We found some instructions on the bulletin board that told us how to increase the memory on our hard memory wired Amiga computers.
I know what you're talking about.
You downloaded it, you printed it out. And I'm going to let you run with it from there.
Amiga had two types of memory. It had chip memory and fast memory. And the more chip memory you have, and think of it in today's, it's like the difference between a solid state drive and a regular traditional platter or hard drive. Chip memory was much, much faster. In our model of computer, it had, you know, like it had 512 megs of chip. They said, hey, you know, if you, this document we got said.
Well, no, it wasn't even, it was 512 kilobytes. It wasn't megs yet.
I'm sorry, 512K, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot.
So this document said, hey, you know, if you open up your computer and you'll get you an X-Acto knife and you'll cut these specific solder traces.
Yep.
And then solder this other one.
You actually did this?
It'll move. It'll give you double a full meg.
You'll get a
chip
full
memory.
Meg of chip memory.
And you trusted this and did it?
Well, we trusted it enough to try it. Yeah, we did.
Wait, whose Amiga did you try it on?
Well, I made sure we tried it on John's first.
We did. Yeah. And I'll be damned if it didn't work exactly as advertised. Yep. These guys knew their way around. It wasn't just somebody trolling you, you know, telling you you could fast charge your cell phone by putting it in the microwave. It was actually good factual information. And it worked.
Well, and I think back then, the point is that at that point in early internet computing history, there was more altruism in those systems than there was negative, harmful trolls kind of thing going on.
Well, the only
on.
People that were on those systems at the beginning were hobbyists who were enthused to be there. They were only there because they loved what they were doing. They weren't there to say, who can I screw with?
You're right.
So, yeah, I think you're right.
And I think that's what the big part of that trust factor was back then. It was everybody wanted to increase and grow this new environment or this new community in a completely different way than you would expect it to happen now. Now, if somebody puts up a new service, your expectation is, what are they trying to get from me? Back then,
here comes the hackers. Yeah. What's the ulterior motive?
Right.
Well, I mean, back then, though, also remember that it took effort to find these BBSs, to connect to them. It wasn't like you could casually do it.
Sure.
Which I think when things became more casual, that's when you get a huger increase of assholes.
Well, because it's easier for them to mess with you, right?
Yeah, it's easier for them to screw people.
Well, luckily, the bully assholes didn't have the wherewithal to know how to get on the BBS, so there weren't as many of them out there.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what it was.
Just me.
Yeah, except for George.
Just you. Just the one jock who got transitioned over.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast.
This is a modem, and with it, you can turn your computer into a window on the world. How? Well, we'll find out today as we take a look at modems and bulletin boards on this edition of the Computer Chronicles.
Do you guys remember some of the really, how should I phrase this, unique usernames that we had to use back then?
Yeah, I think I still use mine.
You never use your real name, ever.
I still use the one I used back then, 1990.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody else uses it, so it's almost always available.
It's not for whatever reason. There's a specific reason nobody uses that nickname hardly ever. It's a terrible nickname. It's there's nothing good involved with the nickname whatsoever. That's why nobody else uses it. I just embrace it.
This was before you had to like tag a number onto the end of everything. People just came up with weird, creative... because often these are closed systems that maybe only had a few hundred users.
Yep.
But you try not to use your real name because you want people to know who you are.
Yeah.
Mo, do you remember what kind of usernames you would use back then?
Oh, geez. I mean, the problem with having my last name, which is you definitely don't want to use that because everybody in there. So, you know, but I mean, we used my name, my dog. We used because every BBS required a different one also. Like there was a different login for each one.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And you had to keep track of those too, right?
Like yeah, exactly. You had to write down paper. We used to write down, like, for this one, I'm so-and-so, and here's the password.
For this bulletin board, this username, and this password. Yep.
There was no password management systems then.
Really. No.
You just put it on a post-it note, pretty much.
I still have my original list of passwords on something that it's written down on. I still have that product.
You're a hoarder.
No, it's the top of my comic book box.
Oh, okay.
It was underneath my desk, and that's where I wrote everything, because it was just there, and I still have that same comic book box.
I remember a lot of times the username that I would use, like why would I pick a username? I'd never done that before, except for like maybe I named a character in Ultima 3.
Right. Yeah.
But then I just called it John. I didn't care. So when I was first asked for a username, for a nickname, I didn't know what to use. And so I used my dad's CB handle.
Oh.
So I figured he'll never be on here.
Right.
So on a lot of bulletin boards, I was Bushwhacker because that was his CB handle.
Oh, that is a great name.
Yeah. So that was it. It took a long time before I had to become Bushwhacker 2 or Bushwhacker 1969 or anything. But I used that one a lot.
Once the WWF wrestling team got together, then all of a sudden John was screwed.
Then you're in trouble. I think somebody mentioned earlier, too, another problem that was existed in all of phones back then that isn't a problem anymore is that you would often incur long distance charges.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my parents
that you wouldn't
remember
do it by
one.
Accident. Mm. You knew you were dialing. You knew it wasn't a 7-digit number. You knew you were dialing a 10-digit number. I have memories of causing problems for myself with this. You guys ever run into problems?
Yeah, I'll say I did. I actually emptied my parents' bank account.
Oh, yeah.
Completely.
Crap.
Yeah. It was when I first moved from Florida to California. We had an internet service provider here in Florida. They had, as part of their service, they had an 800 number system that you could use when you were traveling.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Because this was on the very edge of the internet service provider era. Now, they had it written in all their pamphlets and advertising media and everything that there was no charge for these. Great.
Right.
So when I moved to California, I don't have an ISP right away. It's going to take me some time to get all that stuff set up. Plus, I'm don't have a job. So I asked mom and dad, I said, hey, can I continue to use this service? I know you guys won't really use it, but I can use the 800 number from California. Won't be any charge. Well, turns out that they hadn't been exactly truthful, or they hadn't thought things through. They didn't realize, I guess, how much they were going to be charged for people using this 800 number.
Ah.
So they started charging people on the sly because they had everybody's bank account numbers because you were paying monthly on automatic charges.
Oh, man. Oh.
So in one
That's
month of
good.
Using it in California, they emptied $7,000 out of my parents' bank
Whoa.
Account.
Holy crap.
Yep. Shit.
Yep. And this is in 1999.
How are you still alive?
Well, number one, I was on the other coast, so they couldn't get to me to kill me. And they didn't have enough money to pay a hitman because I just emptied out $7,000. But they eventually, they took that company to small claims court. The bank put all the money back in their account right away, and the bank and them beat the company. The company ended up having to file bankruptcy and went out of business very quickly. But those long distance charges are no joke.
You know, I mean, that was almost by accident. I mean, I incurred some charges on purpose. You know? Yeah. You thought you were using an 800 number. I remember, you know, being 11, 12 years old, and I'm like, all these BBSs are busy. I want to get on a BBS.
Yeah.
This other one is just a county away. I'll hop on it for a second. And you get on, and it takes time, and the modem is slow. And next thing you know, you're on it for a half an hour.
Yep.
And the phone bill comes, and it's several hundred dollars. And it's like, what are you doing on the computer? What is costing all this money? I got a stern talking to.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. The bushwhacker had something to say about what I was doing.
The real bushwhacker.
Yeah, the real one.
Oh.
But, yeah.
One of the nice things about living in New York was that there were a lot of BBSs around. I mean, they were everywhere.
Oh, sure. You know, big city Mo here.
Yeah.
You know, they're all mostly local. But there were some that were pretty, I don't know, I guess underhanded back then, where they were like, you think it's local, but you're not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That'd be sneaky that.
Because New York has different area codes maybe or something? Or
back then, actually, they didn't. But it was, you could dial a number, like, and it, how do I put this? It's like you had to put the area code in, and it basically was a different charge rate than if you called like directly borough to borough.
Huh.
It was weird. But you think it's a local number. Next you know, you're like, wait a minute, I got charged $50.
Then you get your bill. And you're like, uh-oh.
And of course, explain that one to my dad wasn't easy. especially, he's like, what were you doing? And really, I had nothing to show for it. So
Right, you did. So, well, you know that thing I could have typed in myself? I downloaded it.
Yeah. And you only had to pay $50 for that.
Yeah.
Look, my Commodore 64 now plays this tune.
Yay.
Talk about trying to get your Corys out of something. There's no way.
Yeah, right. I'll have to play for the next 50 hours.
There was an experience that I had toward the, I would say toward the beginning of the internet era, but toward the end of BBSs, where through BBSs, I met some other Amiga users who enjoyed, how will I put this? They enjoyed acquiring software nefariously.
Okay.
And
public domain.
You know, that's the way Amiga was toward the end of the life of Amiga. There was no Amiga software to be found commercially in the United States. So the only way you got it was to get pirated software, because nobody would sell it short of you, you know, ordering something from Europe and waiting, you know, 3 weeks for it to get there if you're lucky, and paying all these, you know, import fees. We got all of our software off of BBS.
Yep.
We did. But, you know, each disc was 880K, which takes a long time to download.
Oh, my God.
And so I ran into these guys. They had a club set up. Somebody had bought one of those super fast 28.8 modems.
Mm-hmm.
What they would do is they would pass it around month to month to a different person. And they would say, all right, person A, you're taking the modem this month. You're going to incur the long distance fees to download all the new games that come out on this long distance, sometimes overseas BBS.
Oh my, I can't imagine what that costs.
Then get together with a meeting. You'd have a disc copy party and you'd pass the modem to the next guy. And the next month, he would be the guy that would download all the stuff and incur all the long distance fees and meet up at the next party.
Jeez.
And 1 month I got in on this.
Holy cow.
The good news was I got a bunch of free software at the copy swap party. The bad news was, as a student in college, I did run up a $635 Ooh. Long distance bill that took me quite a while to pay off.
So in hindsight, was it worth it?
You know, it's a story I can tell. So in hindsight, it's fine. You know, it were people I'd never met. And it was like trust factor, George. It's like they trusted. They handed me the modem that probably cost them a grand and said, go ahead, guy we just met. Go download stuff this month. We hope we'll see you next month to get our modem back. And they did.
You could have just taken off.
I could have, but I was too intrigued. Wanted the software. I'm going to come back and get free games, you know. So, yeah, that was an experience. But before we get out of this whole experience of using BBSs, I've got to ask, any of you ever run a BBS yourself?
I never have.
Yes, sir.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about your experience running a BBS.
On that original Commodore 64 with that 300 baud modem and two 1541 disk drives, I ran a bulletin board that I titled Games People Play, and it was mostly dedicated toward messaging. No, games. But it was... It was just, you know, I had collected a piece of software from somebody at school that would help you to run the bulletin board. I didn't write it myself.
Sure.
I opened up some of the modules. I found some modules in some other bulletin boards that I could download and add to my bulletin board. And so every night, starting at, I believe it was like 9 p.m., I could let this thing run until about 4 or 5 a.m. the next morning. Now, the first night I tried it, I forgot to turn the ringer off on all the phones in the house. So mom and dad weren't real happy.
They weren't pleased with that. Yeah.
But after that, I remembered that every night, go around, turn off all the ringers on all the phones, and then start plugging in your modem, turning on the bulletin board. And it was so fun to just sit in front of my computer
and watch people
log in.
That was neat.
Yeah. Yep. Watch where they were going, see what modules they were interacting with, and say, okay, well, nobody is playing chess. Let me take chess down and I'll pull up Battleship or whatever. And
something else.
It was so much fun to be in that big brother kind of watching things roll and helping people to enjoy their computer experience. I loved it. It was fun.
How long did you let that run?
Like about a year, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. About a year, year and a half. It was a ton of fun.
That's pretty good.
I ran one off of my Atari probably about the same time for maybe less than a year. Probably I had my little, I think a 2400 baud modem, and I had a daisy chain of, I don't know, I had four or five disk drives, I think.
Yep.
And it was called That Dern BBS is what I called it. And it was just an experiment. You know, some of the coolest things for me, like you said, that big brother aspect was people would dial in, they'd be poking around. Sometimes the sysop would drop in and it would say sysop has taken over. And it's you there like chatting with him in real time, because often BBSs were not real time. Like
you
said,
that's the only you real dialed time in, you really do,
you send
right?
a message. Yeah. But that was the one time you were talking in real time to a real person, you know, sysop has dropped in, you know, control, and you would chat, and then they would say, oh, did you find this area? Don't forget you can do this, or introduce them to a new game, and then you drop out and watch them play it. Kind of voyeuristic, I guess, but
bit,
in a, you know, kind of techie, nerdy kind of way.
But it's more like you were kind of more interested in what people were doing, not you're trying to spy on a particular person, right?
Yeah, and they're using my computer, so I should be able to watch, right?
So, that should be expected, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
My parents have showed me how to get streaming video over the internet.
My dad showed me this cool real-time radio station online.
Matt, what's the matter?
It's my parents. They still have a 28.8 modem.
Well, like any good thing, you know, these kind of homegrown grassroots BBSs that we all first had experiences with, it's not going to stay that way. People are going to find that, hey, this is a money-making venture. So we started to find, I mentioned some multi-line BBSs started cropping up.
Sure.
People, you know, either invite you to donate or sometimes would mandate a charge for you to access. Understandable. It does cost money.
Yeah.
Some of the bigger corporations latched onto this. It grew into things that became powerhouses.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, big time.
I mean, we saw evidence of this in, like, I don't know if you guys remember the TV show that just finished airing like last year, Halt and Catch Fire.
Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah. Like the last season was them running a multi-line BBS in the beginnings of the internet. That's how those things transition from multi-line BBSs that were regional groups possibly into the giant corporations that just kind of came in and said, oh, look, these guys are making money. Let's crush them under our feet and take over nationally. One of the first ones that I remember was CompuServe.
Yeah.
Yep. It was kind of very corporate and straight-laced, as I remember CompuServe being. It was pretty much all text-based, but it was a global, you know, tons and tons of access numbers. Never get a busy signal.
Right.
That's not true, but that's what they advertised. And they had little areas that you could go into that's specific to, well, you know, I'm a Commodore user, an Atari user, a DOS user, or whatever. They didn't even have games initially. It seemed like really like file access and messaging was their big thing. Of course, they added them.
The thing that they added, though, is like these multi-line, you know, these CompuServes and AOLs and stuff, is that you actually did have some real-time chatting. like at least as far as bulletin boards.
Because
like,
it was so many multiple lines. Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which was new.
You go to real chat room. That was new. No kidding.
Yeah, chat rooms. That's right. That was kind of the first big thing that really drove those companies around were the chat rooms, right?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Another one that I got onto even back in my Atari days was Genie. You remember Genie?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I do remember
Genie. Genie was an acronym. It was General Electric.
No way. Really? Their stuff? Oh, okay.
General Electric Network for Information Exchange. G-E-N-I-E is Genie. Yep.
Huh. Okay.
And that was around the same time as CompuServe, but Genie was... I don't know how long I used it. It was a pay service, but I used the free trials as you would always do.
Sure. Yeah.
And nobody is the bigger king of free trials than the powerhouse of these, which was AOL.
Oh, yeah. The coaster company.
Okay, how many of those discs did you get from them?
Yeah, the coaster company.
That's what, yeah, exactly. Because I would take their discs and they would be great coasters. Those things were awesome.
They would.
Because they sent you so freaking many.
Yep. Yeah.
It was like every day in the mail, you get another free trial. Did you guys like see how many different logins you can try to do to get the free trial as long as possible?
No, I only did one AOL account ever, and that was just so I could use AIM. Other than that, I never really used AOL.
I never dialed into AOL. I went right from BBSs to kind of a free version of the internet for our local library.
Right.
But anybody who doesn't know BBSs or they're, you know, not familiar with the experience, if you saw AOL, take AOL. It is the supermarket of BBSs compared to what was the corner store of old BBSs. It really was
AOL
just a giant BBS.
The Walmart of BBSs.
Yeah, it was just a giant bulletin board system initially.
Yep.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And their chat rooms you talked about, I remember AOL, a lot of their claim to fame is they would do real-time chats
right.
with celebrities. They would bring in celebrities.
Well, that's right. I
and
forgot
say,
about that.
We're going to have a chat with this guy from this show or this author or this musician, and you could talk with him in real time. Or you had to assume you were talking with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, because
time.
There wasn't any graphics to show you the person
nope.
like on a video feed or anything. It was just their name, and you were assuming, oh, that's got to be Dirk Benedict or whoever the hell it was.
Right,
you
know? Just take their word for it. I remember one of the few times I logged into AOL, actually, we had George, you mentioned our sci-fi Star Trek fan club.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guests who was at a local convention was running late to be on an AOL chat room, and they came to my house to log into AOL to do the celebrity chat.
Really?
Oh, when we had the conventions here in town, you mean?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there was a minor B player Star Trek actor who came to my house to log in and do their AOL chat because they couldn't get back to their hotel in time. Yep, that happened. I mean, it's appropriate that we've gotten to AOL here because I would hazard to say that AOL was probably for a lot of people the gateway to what is now the internet.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, they tried to make it accessible. That was their big thing. You know, yeah, they were the big evil empire kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'd be where we are today without them.
Well, no, because they actually got our parents' generation to accept that this was a real thing. With the commercials on TV, mm-hmm. on public network, they eventually bought Time Warner even. I mean,
yeah, they did.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that. AOL was so big, they bought Time Warner.
Yeah, they brought credibility to what became the internet, and that's what allowed our parents to fund us when we needed extra money. Because, you know, for me, I was college age at that time, so I made my own money, but I still needed a little extra help now and again from the parents.
Sure.
If I wanted something internet-based, they would never have given it to me unless I could explain to them, oh, it's this thing for AOL kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then they get it.
Yeah.
And I will say AOL, kind of nefariously, they tried very hard to make you think they were the internet.
Sure.
Yeah. They hid a lot of the internet functions behind AOL facades for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and people kind of thought AOL was the internet and you couldn't get the internet without it. I guess that's good marketing on their end, but you know, ultimately that couldn't keep up forever. People figured out that they are not the lone and sole gatekeeper.
Yeah.
But you got to give them credit. They certainly did mainstream it and popularize it.
Yeah, I think when they started to run into problems was when they got in a lot of controversial trouble for blocking access to different sites that they didn't want people to go to.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Because the internet was supposed to be this free thing. It's supposed to be open to everybody. And that definitely went counter to that.
If Jurassic Park taught me anything, it's that life will find a way.
Yeah.
We want to get to those sites. We're going to find a way to get there. We're going to bypass AOL. You know, that might have been shooting themselves in the foot. If you're going to block me from getting to something I want, I'm going to find a way to get to it. And once I do that,
well, now I figured
you
it
have
out.
Taught me a way to get there. Without
I need you now.
Yeah, but I'll give them credit where credit is due. They certainly did play a part in transitioning us into what we now appreciate as the global internet.
It's a web thing.
The interwebs.
Come a long way from putting my rotary phone into that little cup. I'll tell you that.
And having to dial, actually physically dial a number.
Boop, boop, beep, boop, boop. Look at that noise.
America Online introduces new version 4.0.
There has never been a better time to get online.
The easiest just got easier.
Instant messages.
I can customize my email.
My niece sent me a picture.
If you have a phone line, you can be online.
If anything in this episode has piqued your interest, we've put links in the show notes you can click on to find out more. Catch up on past shows and be alerted every week when a new one drops by subscribing to us in Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, TuneIn, iTunes, or wherever you like to listen. While in iTunes, take a second to rate and review the show. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later. We'd love to hear from our fourth listener, so email your thoughts, suggestions, questions, ideas, or complaints on this or any other episode to podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is so much more than just this podcast. You can also find our video content on YouTube or explore our entire body of work on our website at genxgrownup.com. That is a look back at the world of bulletin board systems, BBSs, from our youth. And real quickly, I'm going to ask you, do you miss it, George? Do you miss BBSs?
Yeah, I think a little bit I do. It's not one of those things that you can go back and put an emulator up and experience and it still be as fun like a game emulate an old arcade game, but emulating a BBS, it just loses some of that nostalgia, I would think. But I do miss it a little bit. I know there are people that still run things like FidoNet is still out there, and
yeah, it is, yeah,
you know, different things like that. But yeah, I kind of miss it a little bit.
How about you, Mo?
The part I miss about it, I think, is just that it was when it first started anyway, it was a very, I hate to say, use this word, but nurturing environment. Like you said, people would sit there and they wanted to help you figure things out.
They did. That's true. Yep.
And whereas today, you know, like I said, I guess back then too, like when you were one of these BBS people, you were part of that kind of almost like a community that not everybody was part of.
Like a little secret club almost.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you knew how to do certain things that other people couldn't do. Yeah. And so that part of aspect of it, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. George, I think you summed it up pretty well when you said you really can't emulate it. We talked about arcades a few backtracks ago where we said, yeah, you can play the games again, but you can't get the experience of the arcade back because that's just gone.
Right.
And BBSs are like that. Yeah, you could launch the BBS software, you could dial in and you could mess around and play that game, but you know there's not going to be somebody waiting to dial in right behind you to do it also, because there's so many other avenues to do it. So I kind of miss the village experience, the smaller little tribal part of BBSs, but I like where we are now. You know, I think I'm glad I was there for it. I'm glad I didn't miss out on it. I don't want to go back. I don't go back. Well, miss it or not, it's definitely a part of our Gen X youth growing up that we are the better for, I think, and so is society and the interwebs in general.
Yeah.
It's been fun looking back on it. I am John. George, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, sir.
And Mo, always appreciate you.
Always fun.
And fourth listener, we appreciate you most of all, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Bye, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Mo, are you still there?
I'm sorry about that. I was blowing my nose, so I hit it on mute. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
I'm back.
I'm like, he's not reacting at all. Are we not funny, or what's happening?
I was laughing to tell Jason the other day, like I told him a joke during Drawn and Paneled. I told a joke during Drawn and Paneled, and Jason's reaction was, right. I went, what the fuck, dude? Give me something. Damn. Really?
Listen, Jason, he's your straight man. He is.
Fuck me. Come on. Just laugh a little bit.
Oh, God. All right. So I'm going to say my bit again. I'm going to try to replicate that. So.
All right.
Hello. Welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.